This is the Out of Water Podcast. Out of Water is a production of Rio Vista Community Church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and tell a friend to help them find Out of Water also.
Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Out of Water Podcast. My name is Sam, and joining me today is Will.
Good morning, Sam.
Today, we are continuing our series on the Ten Commandments, and we're coming up on the Eighth Commandment. Yesterday, I was at a baseball game. I was actually teaching my daughter, Leah, who's really the only one who will listen to me on this kind of stuff for any length of time, but was teaching her like the Ten Commandments and the little hand motions that I learned when I was a pretty young Christian, because I didn't learn any of the stuff growing up. But she had them nailed, already memorizing them. But I don't know if it would work over radio to do the same things. But if you're looking to memorize the Ten Commandments, it's one finger up. There is one God. There are no other gods. Then with two hands up and your pointer fingers up, so you have two fingers up, you have one of the pointer fingers bowing down to the other pointer finger. So it's like, you know, not having idols. Then three fingers up, and then cover your lips with them. So it's like, do not take the Lord's name in vain. The four fingers up, I hold it up like it's a church steeple. And it's like, you gotta go to church. You got to keep the Sabbath holy. Then five fingers on one hand, you make the salute like you're honoring your mother and father, father and mother. And six, you have one hand up with the pointer finger on the other hand stabbing the five. So one and five is six. So do not murder. Then you have seven. So it's one hand up on the shape of a house with the other two fingers up. And they're walking away from the house like a couple leaving the home. That's adultery. Then you have eight is one hand up, three fingers up on the other hand. And the five are grabbing hold of the three and stealing them. So do not steal. Then nine, this is kind of a lazy one, but it's the five fingers cupping the four fingers and putting it over your mouth and being like, do not lie. Don't lie. Okay. Or bear false witness. And then the last one is both hands up. So you have 10 fingers out and it's like you're snatching, you're grabbing at stuff that you don't have, and it's do not covet. So if you're looking for an easy way to remember the 10 commandments or to teach your kids the 10 commandments, there you go. And it's pretty remarkable how quickly she learned them. And then she wanted to write a song and work through the lyrics with me, which was great.
A lot of fun.
As I'm trying to watch the baseball game. But anyway, it's awesome, and it's an easy way to remember them. But today we're getting into number eight, which is the five fingers grabbing the three fingers. It's stealing. So what comes to mind when you think of this commandment? Do not steal.
I mean, right off the bat, just the physical implications of it, like property matters. Like,
yeah,
I own things. You should not take them from me.
Yeah. And so that's one of the things, like we talked about, all of these commandments really have positive implications, right? So, you know, family matters, parents matter, life is sacred, marriage and sex are sacred. And here you're going to have God come along and he's going to validate that you do own things. You do have property rights. And that, by the way, we think of that as something that is just a natural belief that all human beings hold. But in reality, you go to communistic countries and they view the whole idea of private property rights as something that's evil. When Karl Marx was writing about communism, he says, you know, the whole goal of communism is, he says, the abolition of private property. So there's a lot of people who hold this idea that wealth of any sort, any building up of private wealth or things that you own, is an evil idea. And the Bible, which is, by the way, that's probably why communism always wants to smash and get rid of Christianity or the Bible. It is so antithetical to the Bible, because the Bible comes along and says, no, you actually do have private property rights. Like, the whole commandment of do not steal means that you have ownership of something, right?
Yeah, like, it implies that you have stuff to steal.
That's correct. Yeah, it's yours. And so there's all kinds of nuance that the Bible comes with when it's talking about property. So that, and by the way, just as an aside, like a little historical, sociological commentary here, every single society that either holds that all property is communal ends up devastating the poor. Like, you look at all communist countries on the face of the planet, if they hold to genuinely communistic standards, the poor are the poorest you'll find in the globe. It's, you know, Cuba, North Korea, China before market reforms. Like, these places were outrageously poor. And when communism started falling all over the world, we talked about this in our series on education. When communism started falling and collapsing all over the world to give rise to free markets and private property ownership, wealth climbed radically and the rates of poverty fell by half. So communism, this idea of not being able to have private property rights, like you think, oh, this will help the poor because it's not a race for who can own the most. No, it actually devastates the poor. And there's something about the way when God created Adam and Eve, you know, what does he say? He says, I want you to fill the earth and I want you to subdue it and to take dominion over it. And so the whole idea of the cultural mandate out of the beginning of Genesis isn't, hey, race to be the wealthiest, but it's, I want you to go out into the earth and I want you to subdue it. I want you to make it more useful, more beautiful, more like, and so now you look at what separates man from all the animals. I was reading a commentary by Grudem, and he says, you know, you look at a rabbit, 1,000 generations of rabbits will have the same technique of hunting and living and building and, you know, where they find their dens and everything else. Like, they don't change, but there's something about the way that humanity is wired that we take our resources and we build upon them. So if you were to go back to the days of Adam and Eve, put him in a time machine and he shows up here and he looked at what we were able to produce, you know, his instinct would be, how did you make this stuff? And the reality is, well, we subdued the earth. We took the earth and all of its resources and we made them more useful and we built upon them to where now we have airplanes and fuel and computers and satellites and televisions and air conditioning and refrigerators, and all of that stuff was made from the natural resources that God gave us that we harnessed largely out of profit motive to make humanity better and to enrich one another. And we built upon it and made the world, in a lot of cases, better. Of course, we pervert a lot of that stuff and we use it for bad. But the idea is that one of the things that separates humanity from the animals that's so abundantly obvious in the Imago Dei, the image of God that he's given us, is we are a creative species that is always looking for ways to make things better. Always. That you don't find that in the animal kingdom.
Yeah, because the cultural mandate is to take Eden and spread it out.
That's right.
Everything else look like Eden, which is a task, and it's a big one, and it takes work, and it takes effort, and to beautify things that aren't beautiful.
And that's right. And so one of the ways that the Bible becomes confusing is the Bible, on one hand, it looks at the commies and says, no, absolutely not. There is 100% private property rights. You own your stuff, right? But then on the other hand, there's this balancing act where it's like you own it, but you own it as a steward. None of this ultimately belongs to you. You are allowed to use it. You're allowed to own it, but it's in trust from God in all of it. Everything, even your own body, your own life, your soul, your land, your car, your house, your children, your family, all of it ultimately belongs to God. And so you're a steward of it. And so, yes, you are called to pursue private property. You're called that you have a wealth motive. You want to make things better. You want to get stuff and you want to, you know, expand the garden and lay claim to things. But why? It's not for me. I can make things better. Look at my bank account. Look how wealthy I am. The Bible says that you're called to work hard. You're called to accumulate. You're called to do all those things. Why?
Give it all away.
To give it away. I mean, to help the poor, to lift up the disadvantaged, to honor God with your money. And so when you have this command, you know, do not steal, yes, it recognizes private property. 100% it does that. But the Bible will also come and say, okay, now that you have private property, you need to use it for my kingdom to make the world a more beautiful place for everyone.
And that's the ethic of the early church in Acts 2. You see, and a lot of people point to that, to where, like, call it early communism or whatever, but
which
it's
is
not.
Such a dumb argument.
And so, yeah, they built up and they accumulated things and they put it all together voluntarily, but they also still had their own private property, you know, to meet in their homes, to meet in my home.
It's yeah, right.
Still mine. Like, I'm voluntarily giving in my excess and what I can that is costly to me, but for the good of everybody else, but I still have things.
100%. I mean, you look at the stories of the early church and the number of times where a generous benefactor comes and helps Paul, like Lydia, or, you know, Jesus and Joseph of Arimathea's tomb. Like, they weren't like, well, you're wealthy, so you got to give it all away. No, actually, it was they used their wealth voluntarily to advance the kingdom. Barnabas, by the way, was a wealthy landowner. And he was one who helped to fund the early missions. Now, it didn't say, okay, well, I guess I can't be wealthy anymore because we're communists. No, absolutely not. The Bible has a strong ethic. Matthew, you know, has a great party at his house where he hosts Jesus. And it's a rather big party, we were led to believe. Well, how did Matthew do that? Because he was a tax collector, all of his wealth didn't suddenly disappear. You know, the Bible calls you to make good if you've wronged somebody or if you've cheated them out of things, like Zacchaeus, who's like, hey, you know, if I've wronged somebody, I'll give it away fourfold back to them. And in the Old Testament, one of the things, because I'm like, my flesh is libertarian to the bone. Like, and by the way, a lot of my biblical convictions are libertarian. But I know that my flesh goes to an extreme because I'm like anarcho-capitalist almost. Like, you get away from me. I don't want government anywhere near me. I don't want anybody mooching or coming in or imposing on me. But the Bible actually comes when there was the civil law of Israel. Everybody has their private property. But the Bible also does come and say you're to leave the edges of your property for the poor to glean there. Mm. So the idea was if you had somebody that because of generational poverty or because they did something stupid where they lost all of their land to harvest, you would go into the property of someone else, and on the very edges of that property, the owner of the property wasn't to glean their property. They were to leave it charitably for the poor to glean and to get food, which, by the way, meant God is calling you, yes, you own your property, but your property should help to serve the disadvantaged. And also, one of the things you find in the Old Testament that I think is beautiful, but if it were applied today, would really cause a lot of people in our country to have issues, is the law of Jubilee, where, you know, when Israel came into the land and Joshua and the conquest, they divided up the land by tribes. And so in the tribes, your family would have been allotted a particular territory. And, you know, you hope that your lines are in a good place. But what happens is, you know, you get one generation that where the guy's, you know, turns into alcoholism or some kind of addiction, or he gambles the property away, and his kids are left hopeless, right? Like, you've lost all your money, you've lost all your property, you've lost everything. Well, the year of Jubilee is every 50 years. In Israel, all the property would revert back to the family, and it kept a family from falling into a generational curse of poverty, because poverty is a generational curse. And so the Bible comes and says you absolutely have property rights, but there's limits to that. We're not going to make a generation of families, multi-generational, you know, cursed and on the bottom to where they can never climb out of the hole. So we don't have a year of Jubilee anymore. We're not required to do that as Christians. You know, that's long gone. But the ethic remains that we as believers should seek ways to help those that are down and out. And we should find ways to put an end to generational cycles of poverty.
Yeah, because again, this commandment is all about promoting life, just like the other ones were.
That's right.
Like, we don't want to take in a way that destitutes somebody forever.
That's exactly right. So, and there's multiple sides to this commandment that are so profound, because in one sense, like we just talked about, you know, when the Bible establishes these private property rights, what it's 100% not saying is, so go get as much as you can and no one can have any of it, and you're going to build bigger barns and bigger, you know, be a billionaire and keep it all to yourself and hoard all of your acorns. and nobody else can have any, because that's just not the ethic of the Bible. Like, one of the most haunting passages that I find in the Bible comes in James 5. And listen to this. It says, "Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you." It's talking about the final judgment. And listen to what it says. It says, "Your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." So this is what it's saying. You decided that rather than helping those that are hardworking, that are trying to get a leg up, that are poorer than you, rather than being a person of generosity that wants to spread flourishing and make everybody better with your private possessions, you chose to store up. You stored up your gold, you stored up all your precious metals and your garments and everything else while the others were naked. And now on that day of judgment, what the Bible is saying is all that private property where you found all your security and you lorded it over others and you defrauded and you tried to pay them as little as humanly possible so you could get wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. Well, on that last day, all that wealth that's just been stored up in your use and you have not used it, as a tenant and a steward of God, because he had plans for that money, and you, in a sense, stole from God, from his purposes, and so now all that wealth is screaming against you. God, he stole from you. He stole from you. He's made these other people. He's prevented them from flourishing, and in a sense, on that day, because you were so wealthy, God is going to hold you liable for theft.
Yeah, it's terrifying being in modern day America to where standards, goodness. Like, I'm rich comparatively to the world, so like I really want to be like, ah, James 5, not for me.
You're right.
But it's for all of us. It's a serious call to like manage one of our greatest idols of money that captures our hearts so easily and so often is one of those idols that we just have to keep on. I mean, in my life, it feels like a daily thing. Like every day, it's like, how are you going to handle these things?
Yeah. I heard a pastor preach on this particular passage, and he used Schindler's List as the illustration, where at the end of the movie, you have all of these survivors of the concentration camp that have come around him, where, you know, they're survivors. Like, he used his wealth to save them. And at the end, he's still got, you know, the jewelry, and he's got the fancy car, and he's reflecting at the end, like, I could have sold this and bought, I don't know, four more people. I could have gotten rid of this ring, this watch, and bought four more people. And I don't know that we need to feel enslaved to that idea of generosity. Like, I can't have anything nice because I'm a Christian. I don't think that's right. But at the same time, if your God is money to where you see someone hurting and you can do something about it and you feel compelled to do something about it, but your money, your wealth, your financial security is too important and more important than a fellow human being, that's bad. That's not good. And it gets back to something that we've said before, that Jesus says all of these 10 commandments come down to two. And it's love God with everything you got and love your neighbor as yourself. The whole of the Ten Commandments is covered by those two. And it's really like the ultimate things are how you love God and how you love your neighbor. It is not about how big your house can be or your car, because all that stuff is going to perish. But your neighbor will not. So invest wisely for that last day. If you're a genuine capitalist and you're seeking the good return, those are the things that pay eternal dividends. Everything of this world is going to fade. It's a failing investment in the long, eternal sense of things.
Yeah, I love that idea of that article you sent me from, how do you say it? Themelios?
I don't know.
Well, you sent one that talked about business as mission, about if God's gifted you in a way with a talent, with a success that does earn money, that's a beautiful thing because, man, that's more resources to use for the glory of God in a way. So there is, we always think of like giving your life away as just ministry or become a missionary, but in our world, if you can create a great business that helps people on this earth, that gives dozens or hundreds of families money and food on the table for the work they do, well, that's a great gift of God, and that's something to be stewarded and heralded and something to be celebrated in a way, if it goes correctly and if you use that for that purpose.
100%. And so, like, you have this commandment is, it gets so interesting in how you can dissect it on the different sides of everything, because we're really quick, like, when we think don't steal, you know, we want to say, like we've been talking about, you know, it's the really wealthy person who doesn't use it for charity, who's not using his industriousness to make humanity better, to bring flourishing to everybody. But, and so greed and theft and all that kind of stuff is really easy to spot with somebody, you know, who's like the, what's the guy's name? Madoff and, you know, those guys that are like master thieves, and it's all about them. But on the flip side of that, like when the Bible comes with the ethic and you apply the gospel to hearts that are formerly, what is it? Thiefus? What would be the
thieverous?
Thieverous?
I don't know. That's a word.
We'll accept it. Well, who knows? But like in Ephesians 4:28, listen to Paul's instruction. He says, let the thief no longer steal. Well, why? He doesn't stop there as though it's just good enough not to steal. Like, okay, we're done. You're not violating the Ten Commandments, so let the thief no longer steal. But there's a comma there. He says, but rather let him labor doing honest work with his own hands so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. So what is the, I mean, right there, Paul lays it out. What's the Christian ethic of work? You're seeking to make the world more beautiful. You're seeking to spread the Garden of Eden, God's paradise, outward. But the labor that you do is not just to take care of yourself. It's so that you have something extra to share with those in need. You know, the early church, I was just coming across this from Tom had a devotion this week where the Pharisee is boasting about how he fasts twice a week while the tax collector is saying, Lord, I'm not worthy of mercy, and he won't look to heaven. And there's, anyway, it's a great parable. But in the early church, one of their rules in the Didache was that you shall fast twice a week. And the reason why Christians were compelled in the first and second century to fast twice a week, do you know why?
So they could give those meals to others.
That's right. They would still make the meals, and then they would give the meals to the poor, which is just kind of a really cool thing. We don't fast anymore, but for some reason that word, that idea has been in front of me a lot more lately. And it's probably because it's Lent. But that idea of giving up actual meals and saying, I'm not going to eat tonight. I'm going to take this meal, get in my car, go to where I know somebody needs it and feed them in place of it. Like, that is a beautiful picture of what's going on here. God wants you to use your wealth, your private property, to bring flourishing to others and to your family. And one of the things that I love about that is it's like, okay, well, this is Bible talk, but when you jump out of the scriptures, one of the things that you find is that people that are generous with their time, with their money, all of the social science research is now finding that leads to longer life and happier life. So the proceedings of the National Academy of Science, that's just completed a study a couple years ago, and they found that giving money or resources to others actually increases your lifespan. Doing regular volunteering and doing regular things where you're giving away efforts, you know, volunteering for different ministries or organizations that go and help the less fortunate, that actually increases your lifespan, or it's associated at least with an increased lifespan. And there's something about living a life that is not entirely inwardly bent, because the nature of sin, if you have to sum up sin, it is an inward bent, that it's all about me, it's pride. And so what is a generous life? I'll give away what I have to bless you. I'll give away my time to bless you. And so what happens is when you take your eyes off of yourself, do you know where anxiety is? Anxiety is entirely self-obsession. So people that are suffering with anxiety, my hand is raised. It's when you're thinking about your circumstances, you're thinking about your you. Well, what's the antidote for that? One is gratitude, where you're thinking, God, man, I have a lot. God, you've blessed me in my situation, and now I'm going to use my blessings to bless others, and you start taking your eyes off of yourself. So ironically, having property rights, which is a personal blessing, when you use it in a gospel way, that is to give it away, it actually makes your life more enjoyable, one, and longer on average. So it's like you see God weaving, again, his design into the natural order, that when you obey his design, it is fruitful for yourself. There's a blessing to be had. And you know it. Like when you give away your money to somebody, you're more blessed than they are. You know, it feels good. And when you can tithe, when you do that and you're saying to God, like, man, it's really hard to give away 1/10 of what I make. But at the same time, when you do that, knowing, you know, that exercise of saying this does not master me. It doesn't own me. I'm not a slave to it. And you fight that by laying down 1/10 of what you make before God as an act of worship. It's freeing to be able to do that. Let's get into some practical ways where we see this particular commandment come into play. And to start, you know, there's so many verses like this, but Psalm 24 verse 1 says this: the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. So what ultimately belongs to you in the final scheme of things? Nothing. You know, it all belongs to God. All of your talents, all of who you are, your house, your money, everything in it belongs to the Lord, the world and all who live in it. And yet God comes to you and says, now I'm entrusting you as my tenants in this world, right? You're tenants in a land that I own, and I'm giving you stewardship to manage the resources. And so in some sense, yes, we own stuff, but ultimately we're just owning it in place of the one who truly owns it. And so like Jesus in his parables is repeatedly addressing this. Like in his parables, so often it's the tenants in the vineyard. Why? Because, well, they don't own the vineyard. They're just being entrusted with it. And Jesus said, if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? So like that's the idea, the parable of the talents. Like you're being entrusted to manage something, but ultimately it belongs to God, and he's the one who determines your eternal reward in heaven based on how you manage the life, the family, the marriage, the possessions that he's entrusted to you. And so ultimately all of it belongs to God. And so when you steal from somebody else, you're not just stealing from them. You're defying the way that God has distributed his goods.
Yeah, it really ups the ante of it all. And that goes back to what we've been talking about with the image of God.
Like, that's right.
I can't look at Sam without understanding that you've been created by God and God has given you this. So if I take from you, obviously I'm attacking God.
Yeah, when you murder someone, you're smashing the image of God. When you commit adultery, you are mocking an institution that is supposed to be the picture of his relationship with mankind. Every one of these sins, you're ultimately attacking the integrity of God, and you're violating the first four commandments along with them. So some of the things that are stealing are just super, super obvious. Like you know it. You know, running up and grabbing the lady's purse and running away, that's obviously stealing, and robbery and burglary and things like those are obvious. Extortion is stealing, where you go and you say, if you don't give me money, I'm going to do something to hurt you. You know, that's obviously stealing. Kidnapping in the Bible is one of the things that was like a very common law, that you weren't allowed to do that. You weren't allowed to go and kidnap and steal people and make them slaves. Like that was a death penalty offense in the Old Testament. But some of the things that we might not think about as much, or something like this, stealing from employers. So your boss comes along and says, hey, I'm going to give you a job and it's going to be 40 hours a week. And you say, great. But because you know that you're not being watched every hour of the day when no one's looking, you pull up on your phone and you start playing games. And you, before you know it, you know, 10 hours of that 40, you've totally made your own. And is that stealing?
Yeah.
I mean, he's paying you for it. So he's definitely not paying you to play, you know, what's a popular game these days?
I don't know. I'm out of that world.
Jewel, whatever it
Candy
is.
Candy Crush, is that still popular?
Candy Crush. Like, that's, so that is stealing. Likewise, employers can steal from their employees, right? So like if you're doing a good work and I'm not allowing you to share in the fruit of your labor by either underpaying you or exploiting your efforts, or, you know, keeping the rights to something that you've created unjustly so I can make more money off it, that's theft from the employer to the employee. Here's another one, is the failure to pay a debt, stealing.
Yes.
100%.
For sure.
So like we live in a country right now that, because we're a merciful country, we have bankruptcy laws and things like that, to where if you get so far behind in crushing debt, there's ways for you to reorganize or to navigate that without it absolutely crushing you. But that's theft. Like you promised and someone else gave you money or gave you resources with your promise that you were going to pay them back, and you took the money and ultimately were unable to pay them back. You know what used to happen in the ancient world up until not too many centuries ago when you couldn't pay a debt? You know what happened to you, right?
Didn't you go to debtor's prison?
You either went to debtor's prison or you were enslaved until you paid the debt off. Like, is that unjust? Which is more unjust, to just not pay back a debt or to have to work it off? You know, slavery is a bit of a harsh word. We don't like to say that, but...
indentured servitude.
Indentured servitude, or whatever you want to call it. Like... but now we not only go to the place of bankruptcy where, you know, you've hit hard times, you can't pay it off, so we're going to try to give you a structured way to, you know, keep your legs underneath you. Now we just, you know, student loan forgiveness. Yeah, you racked up all this debt, but you know what? Those are rich people and rich institutions and big banks. And yeah, it's unjust how this loan came about. And so we're just going to make them eat it unilaterally. That's crazy. Like, that's really dangerous when the government starts saying we're going to unilaterally enter into discussions and say you're allowed to stiff them, you know, because they're greedy and rich. Like, at what point do contracts matter anymore? If we can just say, well, you know, they're rich, so just we can exploit them. And by the way, all the taxpayers have to pick up the consequences of it. Like, that's theft. It's government theft. And by the way, I would argue, here we go, Will's looking at me like, oh man,
how far are we going to go with this?
But when government taxes you and spends it on utterly idiotic things, like really idiotic things, that's theft. Like it is absolute abuse of power when they do that. Tax evasion is a common one. Like, do you owe your taxes?
Is that common? A lot of people evade taxes?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of people who just don't pay taxes and hope the government never notices, which now in the world of automated stuff is getting harder and harder to do. But back in the day when agents, I mean, it was like looking at physical files and you've got millions of returns coming in. It's like, psh, they'll never notice. And that used to be a common thing where they would find like, oh my gosh, he hasn't paid taxes in 12 years, you know? And so people were brought up on back taxes and all kinds of stuff. But now there's people who you claim things that they shouldn't claim, or, you know, when they're filling out their taxes, they're like, yeah, I really didn't do that, but hopefully they won't check. So I'll claim this and I'll claim that. All of that, in some sense, is tax evasion.
Now you got to be careful because they got guns.
You're right.
Agents, so be careful out there, folks. Pay your taxes.
You don't want me going down that road. IRS agents being given weapons. Like, come on. What are you doing, America? Anyway, charging excessive interest is theft. Like, the Bible's very clear about that. Right after Exodus, we're in Exodus 20, Exodus 22, God's on that one. If you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not be like a moneylender. Charge him no interest. So the Bible's coming and saying, if you're going to lend, and that, by the way, this isn't talking about businesses that have a profit motive so much, but it's saying if you are helping your neighbor by lending him money, don't charge interest.
Yeah.
Like, don't make somebody
who's... mortgage should never have an interest rate.
Like, right.
That has to happen.
Right. Like, back then, you didn't have mortgage companies and stuff like that, where you go in with your eyes open and there are protections. Fraud of any kind is theft. How about this? If you're failing to pay your tithe, is that theft?
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, the Bible flatly says that that is. So a tithe is giving one-tenth of your income to the Lord or the church, his work. And it's so in Malachi 3:8, it flat out says, will a man rob God? It uses very strong language, like you're on the street and you take his wallet. Will a man rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how do we rob you? In tithes and offerings. That's Malachi 3:8. So like if you have things that do not belong to you, when God comes to you and says one-tenth of your income, if you're a believer, one-tenth of your income belongs to me. If you don't give it, by the way, that does not belong to you. 100% of your resources belong to God. And so as a steward, when you say, I'm not going to give you one-tenth for the work of your kingdom, that's theft. And he calls it robbery.
I think a big one today is also taking people's work and either not citing them appropriately or just flat out, in our digital world, just flat out stealing things like that.
Like plagiarism, 100% stealing. There's an entire form of law that is about intellectual property, where notice what the word is there, intellectual, which means it's stuff in the mind, it's stuff you created with your mind, but it's property. Like the music you write, the poem you write, the book you write, the research you did, that is intellectual property that no one else is allowed to come and just literally say, yep, I did that. This is my idea, and pawn it off as their own idea. Like that's a violation of property rights. It is theft.
AI is going to make this even more confusing.
Yeah. Can you steal from AI?
Or just if... So we've discovered this thing called Opus Clips, which takes our whatever hour-long videos, and it makes it into cool, like 30-second, a minute, automatically, like social media posts.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if your employer thinks that takes you 10 hours, but I'm just taking that video and it's doing really good work. Like, are we getting into the weeds of stealing there? Or is that just like I'm more productive? Which is gets kind of wild if AI is all of a sudden for these high schoolers like, oh, I can write this paper by just putting in good prompts.
Yeah.
The better prompts I put in, the better paper I'm going to get out. Is that stealing? I mean, I think it's lying to your teacher for sure.
Yeah. It might not be stealing from AI technically, but it's definitely stealing.
Yeah.
It's claiming work that isn't your own.
Yeah.
And so like, I was coming across an article just as I was reading up on this. Like there's different parts of this command. The first one is, you know, don't take what isn't yours. So that's like the plain and obvious definition of do not steal. Like if intellectual property, physical property, whatever, if it belongs to someone else, you don't take it. Mm-hmm. That's the basic definition. But there's also the sense in which you deal honestly and justly. So if somebody comes to you and they have, you know, a rare coin that you look at, and let's say they're an 8-year-old, and they give you a quarter that's like got a misprint on it and it's really worth $2 million. You don't look at the 8-year-old and go, sweet, bad luck, got him. You know, you're called to deal honestly and justly, even if it hurts you financially. You're called to not hurt other people, right, with the decisions you make. So you're dealing honestly and justly, even if the other person is ignorant. Like you don't want to hurt the poor. You don't want to harm someone else with your deals. In a good business deal, both people walk away blessed. You walk away blessed for the amount that you get, and they walk away blessed by the product or service that was rendered. And then lastly, like you pursue a life of contentment and generosity. So you not only don't take what isn't yours, you do deal honestly and justly with other people, but then with the fruit of your labor, with the amount that the money that you get, you have an obligation to then live generously, remembering, okay, God gave me everything I have. Now, I know that he would want me to keep my family provided for. Mm-hmm. I know that he would want there to be some sense of financial security, and that all comes from him. And so with wisdom, I've got to sit and determine, okay, what do I need to take care of my family? What do I need to be smart and not to be, you know, spending every dime and just going, hopefully he provides next month. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think that there's real wisdom, godly wisdom, in having money stored up for a rainy day. The Proverbs tell us that. But then to say, okay, knowing that all of this is God's, what would he have me do with the property, the wealth that he's given me, and being very strategic. Like, I mean, how many times do we sit down and go, okay, I'm going to put together a strategic plan for my wealth, and this is going to be where I want this money to go. This is who I want it to help. You know, we're far more likely to be like in the moment where it's like, oh, look, there's a person who needs it. I'll give some to him. But like, do we really stop and go, hey, 10% off the top, that's a tithe. Beyond that, like, I know this family in my church is really hurting, so I want to help them. Or it would be fun to get strategic and say, okay, God, all of this belongs to you. This is what my budget requires. This is what, you know, financial stability for my family requires. Here's my, you know, tithe and everything else, taxes. What do I have then to deploy in the excess that would bless the people around me? Hmm. You know, and college planning, I'm sure, is a part of that, all that kind of stuff. But we need to be more strategic about that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting when it becomes a wisdom issue, like you were talking about. Like, on the top, it's obviously an ethical issue, like, just don't take from people. But how do I do this the best way to serve generously, in a sense? A lot of it's about education, I would think, because a lot of times it's great to give somebody on the side of the street something if that's your heart in that moment. But is that helping down the line where there are great programs and ministries? And we do a thing here called Care Portal, which really is educational. Like, oh, this family needs two bunk beds, and this is what they need for this, and they can't get it done. So is this a means you can provide? And a lot of people in our church are a part of this, and they're like, hey, we got that. We'll handle that today. Yeah.
It's fun. It's actually really fun to watch how that works. Cause like you're saying, it'll be, hey, it's a lady who's gotten back up on her feet and needs bunk beds in order to regain custody of children that are now in foster care while she's been getting back on her feet. Can someone help her with bunk beds or clothing or whatever? And it's fun to watch and this is not just our church, it's multiple churches that are working with these kind of tip of the spear ministries that are out there getting referrals from police officers and social workers saying, hey, this person's in a need, where the church is stepping up saying, I got this, met need. And by the way, there's a lot of them that don't get met. And so they're always looking. So, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I partly selfishly, I'd like to know where getting helped. And that's one area where it's not just, hey, here's some money. But what Care Portal does is you take care of the need, but then you also deliver it, and you're the face, hands, feet of Jesus as you're meeting that need in a lot of situations. Because, hey, we have a bunk bed that we're looking to get rid of. And so here, you're delivering it, and it's the church doing what the church is supposed to do. It's not just a government program handout, whatever, that's out there. It's hands and feet of Jesus. And wow, you care enough to come do this for us. It's a wonderful, wonderful program. And they need more donors. So I'd encourage you to do that. And now, so like on the unpopular side of things, that, you know, you've heard all my libertarian bent capitalist kind of framework, but you're not allowed to store up as many acorns. Like the compulsion of the gospel won't allow you to do that. But on the flip side of this, there is an ethic in scripture as well that says you are not allowed to just sit back and not work and require everybody else to take care of you. That is stealing. So like in our current society where we have the welfare system in place to where it rewards people not to work, and you can actually get away with just sitting home and letting the rest of the nation take care of you and your poverty, and it rewards you for that. That is theft. It is plain up theft. Like, it's an unpopular thing to say this day, but if there was a biblical prophet coming and looking at our culture, he would say that is disgraceful. The Bible has an ethic that teaches if you do not work, what?
You do not eat.
You do not eat. If you're not taking care of your family, you're worse than an unbeliever. Like, there are so many lines like that where you have an obligation to work. And the only time where you see where charity is really, really commended in the Bible is when somebody has some kind of a disability that prevents them or some circumstance that prevents them from working, then you find charity that's laid out. You know, when it's a widow, when it's an orphan, when it's somebody who is facing poverty from a circumstance that they didn't choose, the Bible commends charity, and it calls you to take care of the weak, the outcast, the person who cannot care for themselves, the blind, the lame. All of those 100% are in. But for people, now, if you're down and out for a season, I totally get it. Yes, safety nets, I'm all in. But that's not what our culture has become. We have become a culture of abuse. We've become a culture where people have learned how to game the system, where out of pure laziness, they steal from taxpayers. It is 100% the way the Bible would categorize that.
Yeah, I think we know the differences. It doesn't take one look for all of us, and we're honest. We know the difference between the two. We know when someone's in real need and when they need help and when they're gaming a system.
Yeah, and we're just enabling them to live in a life that is hostile to the biblical ethic, to get out there and produce, to subdue the earth, to make it more beautiful. And that, by the way, is one of the things that when you see cultures where they're not allowed to build generationally, you see cycles of poverty. And you look at Haiti now.
Yeah.
Never had the ability to build any kind of sustainable technology, any kind of sustainable economy, and it set them back. And so you have generational poverty that has been put on them because they've been exploited.
Yeah.
And it's like one half of the island, the Dominican Republic, is fine, but then you look at Haiti and you see just generational corruption. Why is that? Because there's no security of property. Nobody wants to build industry there because it's like, why bother? We've been taught that if we try, it's all going to be burned down. The next revolution, it's going to be taken from us. So there you don't find industry that's sustained there. And that's largely because of government theft and revolutions that come in and take from people. And what do you find when that happens? When you lose property rights, and this is the whole reason why I'm bringing all that up. When you lose property rights and the ability to build a better life for your family and to build security and flourishing and all of that through economic means, all of the rest of the commandments get degraded. Mm. And so, like, if you've watched the news, you see that in Haiti, this revolution has gone on, and the leaders of this revolution are cannibalistic, eating the people they kill. And it's like you see humanity degrade into what seems like animalistic status, to where they're eating one another, murdering one another, stealing from one another. All of this, you just see humanity degrade. And why is that? It's because they have never been allowed, without oppression coming in and like real demonic, gross darkness, keeping them from building a life that's a little bit more Edenic, that sees the design of God, the goodness of God, the property rights, the value of life and marriage and family really taking root in a wholesome way. When that is prevented, humanity devolves into a really terrifying, awful state. And you've seen that through revolutions all through South America and Middle America and Haiti and in African revolutions. And like you saw it in the French Revolution, you saw it in Germany, you see it in the communist uprisings of China and Russia. Like when humanity loses its security to take care of your family, good grief, watch out for what's around the corner, because humanity becomes animalistic when it loses the security of knowing how it's going to provide. And that's one of the reasons why this biblical ethic of no, you have property rights. You notice that when the Bible gives property rights, how much of the property went to the government?
None.
Like, okay, you had a king who had a palace.
And Samuel warned them about that.
Oh, completely.
Like, if you have a king, he's going to take from you. He's going to take your kids' first charity. He's going to take your best of your property. He's going to take. He's like, are you sure you want that king?
That's it. I mean, you go through that passage where Samuel's, and look at the number of times. Like you said, take, wild. take. And when humanity loses the security of knowing how you're going to provide for your own family, watch out. Because all of the other commandments, man, I'll kill. I'll kill to take care of my family. I'll lie. I will degrade all of humanity. I'm not saying me, but but that's what humanity does. The moment that you don't have the security of property, food, all that, it leads you to a willingness to violate all the rest of them. And by the way, like, part of this is you need to have a trust in God that He's going to meet your needs.
Yeah.
But everybody has to work together. When the government's not working with you to protect your rights, your property rights, it's setting up bad news to come. When you're not taking care of the poor around you, you're staging the revolution that's going to be led by the poor to overthrow the people who have stuff. Like, there is a beauty in the balance of the Bible that brings flourishing to all if God's people listen to it. It's really a wonderful thing. You know, at the end of the day, it's like we've said, you know, from the beginning of this episode, everything belongs to God. And when God gives us the Ten Commandments, it's not like, oh, here's some rules that are going to make life not fun for you and it's going to steal all the joy. No, oh my goodness, the more you unpack the commandments, the more it should create a longing in you that's like, man, we need to get back to that. Because when people behave like that, we see a world of flourishing. And when people violate this, we see a world that's, gosh, it's really dark. It's really gross. It's really heavy. And so, like, God's design is beautiful and it leads to your good. Generosity leads to your good. Honesty, by the way. So, like, the guy who's got to deal justly, it might hurt when he's building his business at the beginning, but what happens in the long run? All of a sudden, he's got a reputation. Hey, you want to know my mechanic? He's honest with me. He doesn't charge me for stuff that's not necessary. That guy's business grows in the long run, while the guy who's dishonest might get more money out of the gates. But in the long run, people are going to be like, yeah, he screwed me over. He charged me more. He, you know, I took my car there and blah, blah, blah. Like, whenever you're dealing with somebody who's unjust, who's a thief in any sense of the word, their reputation will find them out. And in the long run, there's less security for his business. So there's reward to being honest. There's reward to being generous. There's reward to holding all things in your hands and recognizing, God, this ultimately belongs to you. How would you have me use the blessings you've put in my hands? That's the mission of the Christian. And that's what this commandment is really all about. Amen.
Amen. And just as a reminder, the rebrand is still in process, but one day it will pop up as The Bible Show. Out of Water will not be on your phone or wherever you find our podcast, so be aware of that. And another reminder, if you have not checked out Under the Hood, we would love for you to do that. It's as easy as just going to youtube.com, and in the search bar, you type in the @ sign, and then Under the Hood FL, all one word, and we should be the first one that pops up. But if you're ever having trouble finding that, you can obviously email Sam at sam@riovistachurch.com or Will.
Oh, there you go.
Will@riovistachurch.com. But we would love for you guys to check that out. Like, subscribe. That does really help us out for more people to find it.
Yeah. A lot of fun. A lot of fun to create this stuff. Anyway, we want to thank you for joining us as we talked about the 8th commandment. Next time we'll be coming in for the 9th commandment, which is the 5 fingers and the 4 fingers covering your mouth because you don't want to bear false witness against your neighbor. And just as a spoiler that should be pretty obvious, that's because God holds truth to be very precious. And good grief, is truth precious. When it goes, whew, world gets weird in a hurry, as we're learning. So we want to thank you for joining us this week. Join us next week as we talk about the 9th commandment on the Out of Water podcast. God bless.
We hope you enjoyed your time with us and you will both subscribe to the podcast and listen regularly. You can find out more about Out of Water, catch up on past episodes, and access show notes at our website, riovistachurch.com/out of water.